Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Pope Francis's body has been moved from his residence at the Vatican to lie in state at St. Peter's Basilica. There was applause from the crowds as the procession made its way through St. Peter's Square. With the latest, I'm joined by RTE reporter John Cook. John, good morning. Paint the picture for us there in St. Peter's Square.
Welcome to Piazza San Pietro, Philip. Thanks for joining us in the Vatican, where there are thousands, tens of thousands of people around me queuing, lining up on the cobble square here outside St. Peter's Basilica, wanting to be part of history, some say to me, wanting to pay their respects and wanting to say goodbye and bid farewell to their most popular of popes, Pope Francis. Earlier, as you mentioned, the body of Pope Francis was carried in solemn procession from his residence at Santa Marta, that's within the walls of the Vatican, to St. Peter's Basilica, with cardinals in red, priests and friars carrying candles, Swiss guards in their very distinctive and colourful uniforms accompanying the remains of the late pontiff, walking slowly into St. Peter's Square as male choirs chanted prayer and song and the bells of St. Peter's Basilica rang out for Pope Francis. His open coffin was carried shoulder high on a wooden platform by 14 pallbearers in black suits and white gloves as thousands of people gave loud applause, showing their love and respect for the late Pope. It's been described as an Italian tradition of respect for the dead. I think it's an Irish one too, and certainly this man very respected. Dublin-born Cardinal Kevin Farrell blessed Pope Francis' coffin inside the Basilica of St. Peter, telling those gathered that it was with deep sorrow to his brothers and sisters, he said, that we accompany the mortal remains of our Pope Francis to the Vatican Basilica before his coffin was placed in front of the altar, not on a raised or large plinth as with previous papal funerals. His more modest coffin, though it's still a very impressive wooden composition as well, and zinc involved there too, lies there open on a lower base, surrounded by Swiss guards and praying cardinals and priests. A more simplified approach, though, we're told, than previous papal funerals, as was his request, Philip.
Previous papal funerals saw up to 2 million mourners in the case of John Paul II. Are they expecting similar numbers this time?
There haven't been specific projections on numbers, and I think that'll be an interesting number when we get it, or to see what happens over the next few days. When you look at what has changed, I suppose, in the years since Pope John Paul passed away, while numbers and faith has changed in the Catholic Church for many, this Pope was very, very popular. Last night, some commented on a rosary here at St. Peter's Square that there were lots of spaces and empty seats, and indeed it was the closest we could get to St. Peter's Basilica, right up to it almost, in all the long day we were here yesterday. So many were wondering why more hadn't gathered. I think today and tomorrow and Friday will be the real showing of that, when we see hundreds of thousands lining out to pay their respects. And certainly the signs are this morning, when there are 3 days of lying in state, that will happen. The figures I couldn't guess, but certainly there are many, many people from right across the world wanting to be here. And they'll have that opportunity over the next 3 days, Philip.
Donald Trump said that he wanted to be there. He was the first out of the traps. Who else amongst heads of state is expected to attend the funeral on Saturday morning?
Yeah, there's major security in place here, and we've been moved as I speak to you, in case you heard me being pushed around there a little bit. But there is a major security operation stepping up, as hundreds of thousands are expected in Rome, as I said, along with up to 170 foreign delegations with heads of state, including America's President Trump and his wife Melania, Ursula von der Leyen, our own president, and Taoiseach due to attend on Saturday for the state funeral, along with the UK's Prince William and Prime Minister Keir Starmer, French President Emmanuel Macron, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and the list goes on, Philip. And as I'm being moved along, just to say to you as well, I have been speaking to a number of people who've managed to get inside to file past the coffin of Pope Francis within the last few minutes. They were the people who were here earliest to watch the procession take place and to get in when they were allowed to file past his open coffin. One man from the United States telling me that he saw Pope Francis, he was a young man. He said he saw him like a grandfather to him, and he exchanged letters with him after he had health problems over the years, Pope Francis sending his prayers in written form to him. And he said people inside are praying in silence. Some cried a little. They're praying for him. And in this man's case, he said he asked for prayers for his own intentions, but also he prayed to God and to the Virgin Mother, so close to Pope Francis, asking them to welcome him into heaven. He said he was sad to say goodbye to St. Francis, but privileged to be here among the first to pay their respects. I've also been speaking to a Canadian bishop in the last few moments in the crowd. This is not a spectacular tourist event or sightseeing event, he said. This is a somber occasion, but a very important one for a much loved and very important Pope, and that's why so many want to be here, Philip.
Well, you do what the Swiss guards are telling you to do. They are, despite the uniforms, very serious soldiers. So take care, John, and thank you very much. I'm joined on the line now by former editor of The Tablet, Catherine Pepinster. Good morning to you, Catherine.
Good morning, Philip.
I'd like to look ahead to the conclave, but can I begin by looking back? How do you think, with the benefit of a little bit of distance from this, is history going to regard Francis's papacy?
I think history will regard it as quite a moment. Different tone that he brought to the papacy, different style. Now, those things sound superficial, but I don't think they are. Tone, as in his approach, the way he talked about mercy so much, about compassion and forgiveness. Tone in the way he spoke about the marginalised of society so much. Style in the way he lived, the way he liked to be amongst ordinary people. When he travelled, he liked to meet people. He didn't want to live in the apostolic palace and be on his own. He wanted to be surrounded by people, and he wanted a simple lifestyle. He didn't like people carrying his suitcase when he first became Pope. He didn't want to wear fancy red shoes and a little furry cape. You know, he wanted simplicity. And that's why I think tone and style matter. He's changed the Catholic Church in terms of its structure. You know, your listeners may well be aware of the recent synods that have taken place in Rome, with the rather cumbersome title of Synod on Synodality, but looking at how ordinary people can become more involved in the church's decision-making. But on other issues, I don't think there's been as much change as some people might have hoped for. He made some reforms in terms of how the church dealt with abuse, but a lot of people, including survivors, felt they didn't go far enough and it all got tangled up in bureaucracy. And there were a lot of women who were incredibly enthusiastic when he became Pope. And while he has made some changes, for example, those sinners I was talking about, women, ordinary lay women, were part of those synods. And for the first, and this is astonishing, for the first time ever, those lay women got a vote at those synods. And he's also appointed women to some senior roles in the Vatican.
But yet the conversation around women becoming deacons got precisely nowhere.
Exactly. That was what I was going to come on to say.
Sorry, forgive me for interrupting you.
Don't worry. So originally, he said, let's have a commission about women deacons. And lots of women thought, that's fantastic. We're getting somewhere. And that commission sort of disappeared. And then there was another one. It's just kind of trailed off into the grass. And as to women priests, he ruled that out. So the changes, there have been changes, and yet they're perhaps weren't as many as we might once have thought when he first became Pope.
Your own reporting has offered a fascinating detail of a picture that people might remember from the time that he assumed the papacy. It was of two living popes, the only picture of two living popes ever together. But there was a white box in between himself and Benedict. What was in the box, and how much lighter might that box be after 12 years of his papacy?
Well, I was fascinated by this box. back when that photograph originally appeared, a photograph of the type we'd never seen before, because usually popes die. But here were two popes, a pope who'd resigned and the man who succeeded him. And in between them was a white box. And at the time, Vatican journalists were saying to the Vatican press office, well, what's in the box? What's in the box? Might that be the secrets of the Vatican? Oh, no, no, that'll just be printed out emails that came in for the Pope after Benedict had resigned, they said. Once Pope Francis issued his memoir earlier this year and had that photo in it, he revealed that indeed it was a box of all sorts of things, such as documents to do with financial problems in the Vatican, abuse scandals. All the things that the journalists had suspected might be in there were in fact in that box. Now, you asked whether some of those problems have been solved. Well, some perhaps have more than others. So some people claim that the Vatican has cleaned up its act when it comes to money. Others say that things aren't fully sorted out, but I think the Vatican Bank has brought in some people with a great deal of experience of running major banks, and perhaps things have improved there. On abuse, there have been some changes, but I think that the investigation of abuse and safeguarding procedures around the world are somewhat uneven. Some countries are doing better than others, and so we can't say that things are fully sorted out. And certainly when Pope Francis first arrived and he created a commission to look at abuse, there was a great deal of optimism that things were going to go well, and he invited survivors to be part of that commission, and some of them then quit and said, it's just, you know, what we want to do is just getting blocked by the Vatican machine.
Let us look ahead, if we can, then. Will the church, will this College of Cardinals elect somebody who will continue this reforming tradition, or will they reset to a default?
I think it's very hard to tell what might happen. Now, the pat answer would be, because a pope's greatest patronage is choosing the cardinals, he can make sure that he's got a bunch of guys in place who are
all like him and would elect another him,
kind of a carbon copy. But if you look back to what happened when Pope Benedict resigned, the voting cardinals then had either been chosen by John Paul II or Benedict, and they came up with Bergoglio of Buenos Aires, who was not similar in approach to John Paul II and Benedict. So surprises can happen. The other thing that's difficult this time, I think, is because Francis was so keen that there should be more representation from around the world, you've got cardinals coming in from places like East Timor, parts of Africa that haven't had cardinals before. And those people are not very well known, and they don't know their fellow cardinals very well. So we're not sure how they might approach things. What we do know is that while more progressive liberal Catholics say, fantastic to have more what you might call equality, in that there's a whole range of cardinals and it's just not just now lots of Italians and a few Europeans. What may well be the case is that those cardinals from other parts of the world may, on issues of personal morality, be much tougher than liberals might think they are. You know, that there are some African cardinals who haven't always been delighted by what Pope Francis had to say about gay people, for example. So it's quite a mixed picture. So it's quite difficult to see who might come through.
Quite a mixed picture, and a process that has never really been accurately predicted in recent memory. But Catherine Pepinster, thank you very much for joining us with that analysis.